You're able to record now?
Yep, we're recording.
Welcome to the Cedar Hills, Utah Planning Commission meeting dated Tuesday, March 27th, 2018, at 7:01 p.m. At this time, we have public comment. Does anybody here would like to make comment on whatever topic they'd like to speak to? And we do that for a period of 3 minutes. After public comment, we will have a public hearing on two different topics related to the commercial zone and smoke shops. So if you have comments related to those, you're welcome to do it now or during the public hearing portion of the meeting. Is there anybody here with public comment? I didn't grab the signage. So
there's nothing on it.
Nobody signed up. Does anybody here want to make public comment that didn't sign up? All right, well, now close the public comment portion of the meeting.
Yeah.
Did you want to make public comment?
I'm 2 minutes late. Is the preliminary plan being presented today?
No. For the commercial zone?
Yeah.
No.
It's not on the agenda.
The public hearing is on the agenda. We'll have another public hearing when the preliminary plans are on the agenda. So
I guess I read review recommendation on the preliminary plan that the preliminary plan would be here.
Yeah. Right. So we're now having a public hearing on review recommendation on preliminary plan approval for the Cedar Hills Gateway Commercial Subdivision, located approximately 9026 North County Boulevard in the SC1 commercial zone. Is there anybody here that would like to make a comment on this topic of the public hearing? Hearing and seeing none, I'll now close that public hearing.
Sorry, can I just say something?
Yes.
Just for your information, we pulled it at the last minute because the developer was not prepared. So that's why it's still noticed as a public hearing, because those notices did go out to the public. So we still have to hold the public hearing. We'll do another public hearing when we do have those plans. So you should see another notice in the mail. I'm hoping next month. They're working on the plans now. They just weren't ready. So I wasn't going to come to the Planning Commission with a set of plans that was inadequate.
Will the plans be available to the public?
Yeah, just with the packet.
So now we're having a public hearing on review recommendation on amendments to City Code Title 10 related to regulating the establishment and licensing of smoke shops, vape shops, and retail tobacco, especially businesses in the SC1 commercial zone. Is there anybody here that would like to make a public comment in the public hearing related to the topic of smoke shops and SC1 commercial zone? Public hearing on licensing of smoke shops in the SC1 commercial zone. If you would like to make public comment, state your name and address, please.
Steve Spear, 9937 North. 4680 West. I'm against the smoke shops, the bigger shops, all of those. Just for a record.
Okay.
Is that what, I mean, are we trying to decide if we're going to allow it or not?
It's on the agenda for consideration. Yes.
Yeah, I'm known to that. So
all right.
It does go there.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other public comment on this portion of public hearing? Maybe it's from the public.
Can we get more information about it other than just rezoning? Like, how does this come up? Why is it happening?
Could you come please speak to the mic?
Sure.
State your name and address, and this is not typically a question answer, but I think we can address that for you.
Okay. Travis Floyd, 4499 West Haven Pike. Basically, the information just says, hey, we're talking about rezoning. I don't know why it's come up or if they were zoned before and now they're asking if they can, and there's a lawsuit, or I mean, I don't know why this has even come up.
Right. So we'll talk further about it in the scheduled item portion of the meeting, but the Chandler, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe this topic is covered in the code at all, either permitted or prohibited. So I believe somebody expressed some level of interest in putting such a shot in Cedar Hills, which is why we are discussing.
You're correct. Let me just add one caveat to that, that because we don't have city code, we're regulated under state code. So we're tightening up our city code in lieu of a recent application that we were that was being discussed.
So last month, this was a discussion item in the Planning Commission meeting. This month is a review recommendation. So I'd also refer you to, if you want to, you can listen to the discussion that occurred last month online, cereals.org.
It was just kind of hard for me to comment on something you don't have background on.
Right.
So that's
right.
My comment would be it's an obvious targeting of the high school. That's the obvious market that they're trying to hit. And I think it's an engagement to those kids. And I don't think it's something that we should support.
Thank you. Is there any other comment in this public hearing on this topic before it gets closed?
Dr. Hookie joins.
Big job.
All right, so I'm going to close this public hearing now and move on to scheduled items. So I'll entertain a motion to move item number 5 to our first topic so that we can accommodate the public who may want to not stay here for the entire meeting.
So move.
You made the motion.
I will.
Oh, you're moving.
I will move.
So move.
Yes.
You're moved by my comment, or you're moved by?
I moved by your comment that we move item 5.
Okay.
Item 5 being the discussion of the public design.
Yes.
Okay,
I'll second. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Any opposed? No. So. Okay, so the next topic is discussion on science in the public facilities zone.
Yeah, recently I met with the principal at Cedar Ridge Elementary. She was very kind and gracious, wanting to explore an option for the school down there. I had the chance to drive by Cedar Ridge Elementary there on Cedar Hills Drive and noticed that their marquee is a little busted up, the signs are busted, so they have those old type where you have to manually put each letter up. Vandal, correct me if I'm wrong,
yeah,
but it's Mr. Principal here. Cracked the sign through a rock or something, and the sign cracked it. So they only force, you can only put letters up and force the sign. So I think it says something like,
it says, Kinder Ridge Now.
Now, because the majority of it's busted out. So
very
the principal called me, I had a meeting with her. They wanted to explore the option of having a digital sign at the school. And currently, as our code sits, we don't allow digital signs of this nature, flashing light with signs like this anywhere in the city. You may recall, we're actually driving to the golf course clubhouse here. There's a sign there that it lights up on the inside. It just says Cedar Hills Community Event Center. Staff was originally at that point, we were looking into putting a digital sign there to say, so you could put like what lighting it was. But the residents to the east, they were adamantly opposed to it. However, that's in a residential, technically a residential zone right there. The sign for the school would be the public facility zone, and we are wanting to explore the options allowing Cedar Ridge Elementary and possibly Deerfield at a future date. I'm assuming they're going to have a similar request at some point, allowing them the option of putting in a digital marquee to see that it's typical for schools. And I think there's ways to regulate it so that should there be an impact on the surrounding area, that you can impose certain conditions that it has to be off at 10:50, or it has to be, it can't exceed this such and such level of brightness. There's ways to do this where I think that it can be a positive thing for the community, but also not be a nuisance as well. So we're just discussing this tonight. Because we don't have anything that really regulates signs in the public facility zone, so this would be drafting some new code on staff. We wanted to kind of get some direction from the city, from the Planning Commission on what you felt, where your stance is on it at this point, and move from there.
The public facility zone, besides the two elementary schools in our city, What else in the boat?
Parks, the water tanks,
the golf course.
No, golf course is townsite residential.
This property here?
This is technically residential right here. So it wouldn't allow the city to retroactively go back in and put a sign that residents there didn't want. This would, it would public facilities, schools.
Are the churches? I don't think they are.
I believe churches are.
Oh, they're the residential
zones. They fall in the underlying zone that they're in, because there are a lot of residential zones.
Retention bases?
No.
No, pocket parks?
Pocket parks are.
As I read through that code, I noticed on page 4 that it falls under the prohibited signs.
Say it again.
And I read through the code on signs, and I see that on page 4 that it's prohibited. Flashing, movements, signs. So in lieu of the fact that it's in front of a crossing that would be right near that crosswalk in front of Cedar Ridge, do we have any, are the parts of the city or the school going to do traffic studies to show that what would happen or how to mitigate the risk that would be for distraction? As far as the problem, I know we've got one.
I've never heard of it being a problem. I know like Bone Peak has one for their school. I live by Pleasant Grove High School. They have one for their school. Central Elementary has one. I've never heard of it being a problem before. That's a good question. I can put an inquiry to the district to see if they've done anything. If they've ever had any incidents like that, that's a good question. I don't know the answer, but I can follow up.
Okay.
So, just out of curiosity, what's your name in Cedar Ridge?
I'm Zach Nelson. I'm the.
Zach Nelson.
My friend.
So, help me understand your preference for digital sign versus your traditional sign. What advantages, disadvantages to your educational effort?
Okay. Zach Nelson. I'm the TAA at Cedar Ridge Elementary. We have had our current sign for 20 wonderful years, and it is the kind where you have to go up and slot your letters in. The majority of that is broken. We have banners, break those types of things. And at this point, because of the sign the way it is, we don't have any way to, if it is vandalized, to go back and get any money to help replace that. So a current digital sign would come with like a vandalized insurance protection plan, so that in case it is broken, that's one of the next things we're looking at. One of our big concerns is that sign has to be manually changed out, and that takes a lot of time and effort for our custodian to go out and put things up and to get creative with how he can spell things out with limited space. With the digital sign, we'll be able to put things up that are information up on the board on a regular basis and change that on a regular basis so that it's current and up to date. For instance, we had the caucus meeting that was held at the school, which is not something we're able to put up on our site for people to know because it just doesn't fit up there right now. So because we do provide a public place for things to take place within the city, that's one benefit that we would have. A lot of it has to do with getting out pertinent information to our parents and our other stakeholders that are in the area in a timely fashion.
Have you already selected the model you want? You fucking like having the sign?
There's a letter in a marquee command for makeup that you can remember with you. Pass it out. So there's one for each. Please take one. If they want to be each, pass it down.
I have one comment on that. It's with a digital sign, people can't rearrange the letters to say naughty things. That's happened before.
Seeing how we went to rearrange some letters that were changed just before school started, that's a very valid point. Something that we thought. The digital makeup of that you're seeing in front of you. When the sign was originally put in, the company built two massive brick columns there to house the sign. Because there's a light in the sign, there's already electricity in the sign, we which is one of the huge costs of putting in a digital sign, is a lot of times they have to go in and dig out for electricity and lay their pipe and everything like that. Well, we already have the infrastructure in there, and then to be able to change it from within the building to whatever is needed.
Would this Cedar Ridge Elementary portion be backlit permanently, like a permanent backlit? Is that or is it just daylight use, daylight view only, or?
In that one, I'm not sure. Typically, they do put lights behind that that will be turned on, with, either with a timer or whatever it is. But with a digital sign, like Chandler stated earlier, there's an off switch as well. So when it comes to light pollution at night and summertime use and winter use, we will be able to adjust that.
I have a question. Would it be a crawler type of sign, or would it be just like the flashes with this information on that message and another message, or is it like long heat to the crawler?
That I'm not sure. A lot of it has to do with what message we display. Whether we want it to crawl or whether we want it to flash information and stay there for a while. This isn't exact science here, but I think that is a setting that you can change within.
Okay.
With the newer signs, they're
either
or. So
there should probably be a time limit on each message so that it's not flashing through lots of messages,
yeah,
confusing and distracting people. There's, I think on some of the digital signs up on I-15 and those kinds of things, I think there's a time limit where each one has to be up a certain amount of time.
Probably based on speed.
Yeah.
I think one other thing to note is that the sign faces east-west. It doesn't face, it's like the nearest residence is going to be in front of the lane light, just very far away. So light pollution, I'm much less concerned about.
So there's a lot of height here, but it looks like this is about 5 feet tall.
At the bottom of the sign, it's about right here on me. So it's
a tall sign.
Yeah, it's pretty tall.
Yeah.
So when our custodian goes out to change it, we can hold the ladder out there and manage the needs.
So this is a discussion item only tonight, and anybody want to discuss something?
The concern I have, and Chandler can probably address this, is less with the elementary schools and more with public facility zones, because we have other public facility zones where I don't want to see signs.
Mm-hmm.
And can we limit it just to schools?
Yeah. The city has no plans to put in a sign like this at the park.
But if we make it permitted, I don't want...
You could. I see where you're going with that. And technically, if you change the code to allow the public facility zone, then they could do that.
Yeah.
The city has no plans for that. So if you want to carve out the language to allow for K-12 schools, public schools even, I don't know, area you want to make it, but you can carve it out so that it limits it to just the schools.
And what about only in the case that they're replacing an existing sign in a similar footprint? Can we do something like that this is only to upgrade existing signage or school?
That one I would probably think maybe could be a challenge. Just because if you're going to allow one school to do that, I believe that just based on equity, you have to allow both. So it's really, that's why we're saying it's not just for Cedar Ridge. I know that they're the ones leading the charge here. But Deerfield, I would assume in the next 5 years is probably going to be in a similar boat where they're going to say, I don't know, we have a marquee site.
Right, but that wouldn't, a restriction like that wouldn't prevent it. There's already a sign, and it's just being replaced with an upgraded technology that.
Right, but so you're saying they don't have to wait until it's broken with vandalizer and heat, they can just replace the current sign.
If they wanted to, but only for something that there's already a sign. So like we can upgrade it to this technology for schools, but we can't put in a new sign where there wasn't any sign before.
Possibly.
Because I
isn't there already a digital sign on the side of the school?
Deerfield does have one on the, a digital sign on the side of their school. One of the issues that we have with that is you have to physically turn into the school to be able to see it, whereas we're hoping to have it out there where people would be able to view that information.
So I think the point there is that they're not that noticeably adapting. It's that much of a change. Because there already is one down there. I honestly can't really tell you where it is. So it's really an ineffective sign. But
so this will be a future agenda items review recommendation.
Right, but.
And does it necessitate a public hearing?
No. Yes, it will.
Yeah, so there'll be a. So for the public, we'll have a public hearing on this topic all the next month, I guess. And we'll also have a review recommendation. So tonight's just a discussion. I'll share my thoughts. I'm not necessarily opposed to giving the public schools the ability to communicate. I'm not real excited about such a call sign, though. I don't really, I'd rather have something that is much shorter, half the height, versus something that's a monolith, I guess, if you will. So that's my thoughts on the matter. And I'd be maybe limiting it to the schools as well, which is the public facilities zone. And then I'm not an expert on moons and lights and all that stuff. I don't want one of those really, I know what bright is and what bright isn't, right? I mean, I just don't want one of the bright lights that when you drive by, it's like, like your pupils change dilation because it's so bright, right? So whatever that is, maybe there's information around that when it comes back. I also think it's annoying exactly where you intend to place the sign.
It's the current on the
property. What's that?
Current footprint.
Well, I guess I could drive by and see the footprint, but there's not a sign there right now, right?
Yeah, there is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it would just
replace that sign.
Literally replace the sign there. And that's why you see the pillars in the picture, because those pillars exist already.
The sign's already that high.
Yeah.
And in full disclosure, so I've had two of my children attend Cedar Ridge for the first open. Before the bathrooms had walls and stalls. First week of school, they didn't have any walls in the bathroom, so I opened. Just a little trivia there. Uh-huh. And then I've had kids attend here too, so. Any other comment or discussion?
No. Just on the height, I think since there are concerns about vandalism that happened in the past, the higher the sign, the more effort you have to make to go vandalize it. So that's my only thought there. At least have to like stand in the back of the truck or bring a ladder to go vandalize on the tire.
Yeah. Has to be pretty deliberate.
Right. Versus one that's on the ground you can go vandalize.
Well, right. Yeah.
All right.
Well, then I'll draft some code based on that feedback. I'll let you see that as well. Great. And we'll probably have this on the agenda for next month.
Alright. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So just for those of you that are here from the public, we had a public hearing on the commercial zone earlier. I wanted to let people know that we're not considering a review recommendation on the commercial zone topic tonight. So if you're here for that topic,
we don't have to sit here and listen to you anymore.
This is a public meeting, you're free to leave whenever you want. But just so you're aware, we're not going to be discussing further that topic tonight, just to make sure that we do that. So,
when is the next time you're doing
it? Probably next month. So we notice again, we'll have another public hearing on the topic again.
Right, and the developers here, right?
And no, the package wasn't there.
Yeah. The proposed zone change?
I'm sorry, what?
The proposed zone change as well?
Yeah,
it's already been
That's already occurred.
That's all, yeah.
That happened last
week. Just a brief tangent. The next month's meeting, we need to reschedule.
It's not before Tuesday?
I'm out of town. I'm at a conference in St. George.
Okay. Well, we can meet without you, Shannon.
Okay.
All right, well, we'll cross that reach.
We'll be in touch.
So just sort of public knowledge, that I'm just letting you know that we had a public hearing on that topic. We'll have another public hearing on that topic, and we're not discussing it further tonight. So,
no,
just so you know.
And if I can make one more comment, be aware, the public comment section and public hearing is always at the very beginning of our meetings. The meetings start at 7. If you want to comment, you need to be here before 7 o'clock so you can sign up for that. It's just for your information.
So the next item on the agenda is review recommendation on amendments to the City Code Title 10 related to regulating the establishment and licensing of smoke shops, vape shops, and retail tobacco specialty businesses in the SC1 commercial zone.
Now, recently we had an inquiry put into the city that individual was interested in opening a smoke shop, vape shop in the city. And city, we never really had an application for this before, and so we looked at the state code, and there's certain guidelines that you have to be at an event, can't be within a certain distance of schools, parks, churches, residential areas. And where currently he was proposing to put the smoke shop, it was too close to Wilmington High School. But in our reading of city or state code, State Code 10-8-41.6 states that the regulation of the retail tobacco specialty business is an exercise of the police power to the state and through delegation to the other governmental entities. The state code further states that nothing in this section requires a municipality to issue a business license to a retail tobacco specialty business or prohibits a municipality from adopting more restrictive requirements on a tobacco specialty business than provided for in this section. And keeping in mind that just because you sell cigarettes does not mean you are a tobacco specialty business. 35% of your sales have to be based on tobacco sales in order to be a tobacco specialty business. Cedar Hills, after meeting with the council and discussing with you guys last month, we wish to adopt more restrictive language that prevents these types of businesses from opening in Cedar Hills. As the Cedar Hills commercial area is across the street from a high school and is adjacent to a residential area, we feel like this is a necessary precaution to take. Now, I know the state code allows us to prohibit these should they come along. However, state code is subject to change over here. So rather than be subject to state code, Cedar Hills is proposing to just adopt code ourselves, saying that we restrict these types of businesses within our jurisdiction boundaries. The code that you have is that's being proposed is not drafted by Cedar Hills. It's actually adopted by Washington City. They already have a few smoke shops, and they had a few more than one built. They started saying, okay, well, we've got to do something about this. So they drafted this code. So some of the code we saw last month, it was edited down because we don't. A lot of it talked about existing smoke shops and how you deal with existing. That language has obviously been removed. However, establishing the definitions and establishing that these are not allowed in the city will, I think, greatly enhance the city's position should there be an application in the future.
So this code that's provided here, is this what staff is recommending we adopt? Or are you asking us to edit this? Or do you think it's
a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B? We're going to adopt this code with your edits.
But if we didn't edit anything, is that by this code acceptable?
Yeah, it's been reviewed by our attorney as well. He's okay with it. Especially given that other city has adopted this.
Question is, to this business had already applied and it was turned down because of the proximity?
No, he had never actually applied, never made application. So, a couple points to make here is, one, there was never an application, just an inquiry into the city. Upon the inquiry, that's when the city started looking into required distances and responded to him that he was too close to the high school. Can't be within 1,000 feet of the high school. But that's not measured from the front door of the high school to the front door of the smoke shop. It's measured from the property line of the high school to the front door of the smoke shop. So when you take that into consideration, it was like 500 feet away. It's just way too close. So we informed them of that and haven't heard anything. But had there been an application, and had there not been an issue with the distance, that would be something that we would have to be dealing with otherwise. There is an argument in the state code that the city could have turned down the application either way, just given the police powers that are delegated to the cities by the state. However, because we don't have an application, we don't have to do it. But we can preempt those applications by another.
This one's an application for me.
We have to process it.
Yes.
Well, we have to process it some way. In this case, normally, yeah, but in this case, the state does say that nothing in the section requires a municipality to issue a business license. The city could have just said, no, we're not going to do that. However, like I said, state code can't change, so that provision may change over time. So rather than wait for that to change and just rely on that provision, we're adopting it.
So one thing I don't see in this code seems specific to tobacco.
Yes, it is.
And does not include vape products.
It includes.
I just didn't see anywhere in there.
Is tobacco product under definition in the state code? Does that include
vaping? It includes e-cigarettes.
E-cigarettes.
We notice smoke shops, vape shops, and retail tobacco, especially businesses, that this code pretty much seems limited to tobacco, especially businesses. It doesn't specifically call out smoke shops and vape shops.
Yeah, so under the definitions, there's the tobacco product, and it's just referencing state code in this case, 10-8-4161C. And rather than take their definition, apply it in ours, we're just going to reference theirs. So that when theirs changes, ours changes with it, because the reference is just stupid reference. Someone can look it up, but that should state that it includes e-cigarettes.
I would prefer to add in our own language, should the state decide to change their codes of vape to permit vape shops, and then we've now permitted vape shops because we're using their code. So we added in ourselves, we could say Utah code, not have exact verbiage here, but vape shops and smoke shops or something to that effect. So that, I could foresee someday where the state code may change to permit vape shops based on some lobbying effort or some business entity someplace. Now it's a lot of our city.
So tobacco product means any cigar, cigarette, or electronic cigarette. Tobacco product as defined in section 59.14.02 includes chewing tobacco or any substitute for tobacco product, including flavoring or additives to tobacco. So vape shops are clearly in.
Can you quote that and say,
you can. My issue with quoting it is, it's kind of just a general principle when it comes to code, is that the more you quote state code and reference it, if state code changes, you don't catch all the changes in your own code. So it's like one lags behind the other.
So to your point, right, we have like three or four different places here where citing city code is adopting our code. And if that city code or the state code changes, then
that our code changes, you're right. But we're not creating language that is contradictory to a reference that we have our code. This also goes to the point that these changes don't happen just overnight. We know that they're happening. On the legislative level, the city watches bills from January to March. We watch the legislative session, we watch what's happening, track bills, go to Salt Lake. I went up to the Capitol a number of times to listen to presentations on lobbying efforts and to give feedback. So these things don't just happen in a vacuum. We know they're happening.
Well, anyway, that's my, I don't know if the commission agrees with me or not, but I would like to add vape shops, the smoke shops, or at least the very least vape shops as part of the...
Where do you suggest adding it?
It could be under the tobacco product definition, expand that, or we could create a new definition altogether.
I mean, if you could, rather than reference state code, use reference state code, and then at the end of that sentence, just add a comma or semicolon, say, and shall include, right?
You could just say comma, including vape shops, period. Not reasonable. Anybody in the group opposed to that?
I'm not opposed to that.
I'm not opposed to
reference vape shops somewhere.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I saw on the city's Facebook page, there's some real bit, there's some real bad information going around. Someone said that what allows Hearts and Walmart to sell cigarettes. You know, what's the difference? I walk in there and I see cigarettes. Well, this is a picture of a vape shop. If you can't walk into a Walmart and a vape shop and tell the difference, it's probably on you.
The reality is, I don't know if there's other terms for vaping. I'm not a vaping expert, but the reality is that the words may change. I mean, 2 years from now, vape might not be the buzzword. It might be missed shots or something. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? So, a lot of people are on top of that, I guess, as well. Anybody else want suggestions or on this code that's before us?
I'll pick in nits here. Under paragraph 3D.
Say that again.
Paragraph 3. Under 10.539B, 3D, okay. The sentence ends in or.
Right, because it's leading on to the next number 4. I can check that, but I'll look into it.
Yeah.
I'll double check that. There could have been an E that was referenced in the Washington City Code.
Yeah,
if there's nothing
I just struggled for what the or was leading to.
If there's nothing there, I'll delete it.
Just check.
Yeah,
thank you.
Not to be ambiguous. If this is proposed, we need to make sure that all the Washington City references are purged.
Oh yeah. Well, this is just a once it goes to the City Council, it'll actually be in code format. So we're looking at the.
We are
because when the City Council adopts it, there's going to be a resolution or an ordinance number. It'll have bunch of whereas the legal team puts together, and then that's
what those
sort of really legal.
But this
we're looking at substance here.
But this body's job is to review and recommend the code, so we should make those recommendations tonight.
Yeah.
It's not our job to send shoddy code off to see council to clean up. Right? So
that we can't before we get there.
No, based on our recommendations.
Yeah.
So, how many Washington City references are there?
No, I don't know. I'll just
check them out and just go through two.
Under definitions, there's one under a business license. Just call my eye. So that's, I think we have two change recommended changes thus far. If you keep track, Chandler, you're right.
I got it. And I do know that the other references to other city code are correct.
Big Johnson site in deleting Washington.
In Washington City.
Okay. You can make a motion whenever you want. That's your right.
Are you ready?
I'm always ready for abortion.
Okay. I'm going to move that we recommend the proposed amendment to Cedar Hill City Code Title 10 by adopting Section 5-39 related to smoke shops, vape shops, and retail tobacco specialty businesses. In the SC-1 commercial zone, subject to the following changes, such as including the term vape shops in the definitions and removing any reference to Washington City.
Do I have a second on that motion?
I will second.
Before we vote, can we have a discussion with those who have any to be voting on the first one?
Yeah.
Add what?
He should be recognized as a voting member.
You already
voted. You already heard
one. I wasn't here.
Yeah. Let the record be known that Steve promised right at me is now voting number 5. Okay, so any discussion before we vote?
Yeah, as long as we reference the shops, yeah, I'm good.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion carries. So the last agenda item tonight is review recommendation on amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapter 532, related to accessory apartments.
Yes. I'm actually going to turn the time over to Jenny, who's here. She's going to continue her presentation. I noticed she refined the code here, and I'll chime in as needed.
Thank you. You've got this, you know, kind of do, I'm going to kind of break it down for you. I don't know if you want to show you all the code again, but just in terms of there are a few that have been added into here. I just cleaned it up and collected it. If you have any questions or you want to go back, please let me know. Under the accessory apartments, the definition, accessory apartment is for the dwelling within an owner-occupied building. The wording has changed to, it was which has, it's changed to may have. And we did that because it would accommodate for a room, if they rented a room off to the side or a studio-type apartment. So that would be added into the, it changed instead of which has. If you go down to intent, purpose and intent, I've cleaned that up a little bit, just to accommodate a little bit what we need to. I'm going to go down to conditions and criteria under conditional use permit. You wanted to change to, instead of city planner, I changed the wording to zoning administrator and building official. They'll be the ones that will make the conditional use permit. Down on building permit, there's some wording at the bottom of that is crossed out. In accordance with Utah State Section 10-9C, 511.5, changes to dwelling egress windows. Our building official reviewed this, and basically it's reiterating what's already been said further down in the code. So it's just cleaning that up a little bit. Down to F on addresses, the principal dwelling unit and accessory apartment shall have the same address number, but shall refer to the principal dwelling as Unit A and accessory apartment as Unit B. Unit should then have an external entrance to the ADU. So we just want to clarify that as well. Size limitations. Accessory apartment shall contain not less than 300 square feet of living area and shall comply with size and access specifications to internal residential and building codes. Like I said, go back on this one where we're adding and changing a little bit. This accommodates for that single bedroom with a shared living area. What we've added down here is accessory dwelling units are subject to compliance with the current building code at time of approval. Accessory dwelling unit that contains a studio or single bedroom with a shared common area is exempt from minimum square footage size limitations of this section. On the next page, as far as owner-occupied, we had some discussion last time as far as wording on that. I did change a little bit about this, as it states as follows. Owner-occupied, no accessory apartment shall be created or occupied in a single home. We took out if the owner occupies the main dwelling to add, unless the owner of the property resides in either primary dwelling unit or the accessory apartment. For the purpose of this section, the term owner-occupied shall be defined as a full-time residency within the home of bona fide property owners, as shown to the Utah County Tax Assessment House. We have a couple of different options here. We can leave this as is here, or we can add the below down before section 1, A, B, and C. That's an option, or we can admit that. If you go down below, the owner occupancy shall not be required when the owner has immediate relative living at the residence in his or her absence and has submitted a temporary absence application prior to the meeting of the temporary absence and meets the following criteria. A, the owner has a bona fide temporary absence of 3 years or less of activities such as temporary job assignments, sabbaticals, and voluntary service. Indefinite periods of absence for the dwelling shall not qualify for this exception. So this will meet those residents that want to serve a 3-year commission, basically. In addition to that, we want to add in the owner has placed in a hospital, nursing home, or assisted living facility, or other similar facility, And then C, the owner has resided with the residence for at least 1 year prior to the beginning of his absence. What do you recommend? Do you want to keep that as is, or?
Of course not. So job well done. I think it addressed a lot of our discussion from last month. I think this body probably has a few recommendations nonetheless. I know I have some. But what I'd like to do, I think, is start with John. John is ready. So let's, why don't you bring up everything you would like to bring up, and then we'll go down here. I'll end, and then we'll probably do another round. But go ahead, John.
Actually, mine are easy. The first one is I'm trying to understand right at the beginning, first page, where it says dwelling single family, and then below it says dwelling single family. Both these paragraphs are word for word the same, except we've added this clause on the second paragraph. Are both of these necessary, or you know where I'm at, right?
There should be some strike-throughs on this first one.
Strike-through on the first one, right? And we're replacing it with the second one?
Correct. Sorry, yes.
Good. That's what I thought, but I was... second page. B1G. Interior access. I believe we've allowed for there to be a second building. Isn't that what we're allowing here? If you have a mother-in-law apartment that's not attached to the home?
We are allowing that.
We are?
Yeah, it's under accessory apartment 2 within a detached accessory structure associated with a single-family dwelling. So in that case, that wouldn't apply, but if you don't allow it, if you don't require it within ones that are within the basement, then you're just creating a duplex.
This conditions and criteria, it says an interior access between the main living area and accessory apartment must be maintained. If the accessory apartment is not in the same building, you can't have an interior access. There's just a logical...
So this one wouldn't be enforced?
It wouldn't be enforced, but we can't write code that...
Well,
you're referring to exterior access. Maybe that's where you want
No, I'm not.
Let me finish my thought. So... This refers to interior access, right? You might want to have a different section to refer to exterior access. Exterior accessory apartments.
It's saying in order.
I mean, we can add language there that says the interior access between the main living area and an accessory apartment must be maintained, comma, and I'll figure something out. I don't know what it is right now, but.
Unless it's a separate building.
Essentially, all you're saying is unless it's a
unless it's in a detached accessory building, you can do that, and that's simple enough.
I just think you just change the title, say interior apartment access. That's the second one.
I would be fine with that.
And that makes sense. You say the interior access, you say interior apartment access is the title of that section.
That makes sense.
Only applies to those with interior access.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because right now we're putting this condition that applies to all of them.
So we had apartment right there. Interior apartment access.
Yeah, I think you can just say interior access when the apartment is within the main dwelling.
There you go. And I
there's just a rewording. We can do that.
Anything else, John?
No, that's actually all I have.
All right. Ariane?
Okay. Mine's on that same section, but under K. Utilities. Single family homes and accessory apartments shall not have more than 1 meter of each water, gas, and electric utility service. And the meter shall be in the name of the owner. The one thing I think we maybe should add for that in today's world is the internet, because that is now part of what is concerns next. I want to say that. Yeah, utilities. And we just had one of our kids move to, it was an accessory apartment in a townhome in Provo, and they actually couldn't get their own internet access because there was already an internet modem attached to the main dwelling. And so unless they were gonna share passwords and bandwidth, they could not get their own internet. They could not get Google Fiber to come down and give them access, so they had to go work out with their neighbors. So, I want to say it needs to be understood that they're going to share internet.
I think the issue there is that we just have no control over that, though.
Okay,
that's
true.
I see that that's an issue, but we're not the internet, the ISP. I just can't do anything about it.
Satellite television for that same concept. And phone service.
That's an interesting problem they had.
That same concept.
Because, yeah, you can't do cable. The other one already has cable. You can't get a separate cable.
Do they require a separate address?
This apartment complex in Froa, there's no separate address.
So that could also be, because then in their system, they're showing that two people at the same address, so they're not going to set up a second. So that could also be part of the problem there.
It is, because this is not my intention.
So maybe we're addressing it by requiring a separate address that gives Comcast or whoever the ability to put in a beam. Okay, it's a good catch.
But only a separate address is required if there is an external entrance, right?
Yeah, we're doing the same thing.
But if there's not an external entrance, this apartment down there probably actually shares one entrance. And then they veer off from this laundry room, this common laundry room, into two apartments.
Yeah, so this one and the accessory apartment as a unit B unit should then have an external entrance to the ADU. So we're saying that if there's an external entrance, it should have a separate address. If it doesn't have an external address, let's say it is just a situation of a widower renting out a room, then they're going to run into the same problem. But I think it goes back to the city can't do anything about the internet. We can do something about the water, sewer, gas, power.
Okay.
But
these are all optional activities, right? You have to have water, gas, electric, cable, phone, internet. I don't know if it's like another section we create. I don't know if it's we don't. Is it?
I hate including them just because we don't have any control over them.
Well, we have no control over a lot of our code, actually.
Well, no, I have no control over it. Is.
And so you don't need it, I guess. So there's no way to enforce that they get it.
It kind of goes back to the enforcement measure of passing code that we can't enforce. I mean,
right.
I can't enforce this, so.
Right.
And it's just probably a definition of, is it inhabitable? It doesn't have internet.
I would think it's not, but
people can't live without the internet.
I don't believe it.
It happens every day. I'm living so it does happen. Just ask my grandma. Anything else, Lorraine?
No, I thought you captured everything you talked about last month really well. I just wondered though, if on definition of the apartment, it needs to say, as I'm talking with David about this right for the meeting, like, do you mean to say that it, is rented? And then what if it's not, what if it's rented for a short time and then it's not rented? Can you just let your license lapse or your permit lapse that next year?
And this is where we address it at the registration.
Okay. That's all I have.
So, in the B1, it does say maximum one accessory apartment.
Where are you looking at?
B1B? Section B, B1B. I think we should maybe clarify, too, that also means rooms, because if you can rent out a room with common spaces that are shared, and that counts as an accessory apartment, we need to clarify that you can't do that for two different people rather than just. I could see that being abused if you had a house built with six bedrooms and all of a sudden your kids were gone and you wanted to rent out more than one of those bedrooms, like that could be a problem.
Right, and where this does address that is if you go down to J on occupancy, occupancy accessory apartments may be rented out to one family unit. And so that would refer back to the family definition to that in order so they can't rent out more than this.
But isn't a family no more than four unrelated people?
Yeah. Yes.
You could do that. You can do that right now, though. And we do have a couple instances of that happening.
And on parking, the approved driveway, is there any provision for unused driveways?
It would have to be on a hard surface, so gravel, asphalt, pavers.
Even road base.
Road base.
Right. No, I just making sure that people are parking those spaces in front of them.
Yeah, and not parking all around. That's
we're dead.
Complaint that we did get. But a lot of this, when you refer back to the occupancy. If the property owner can't provide parking for everybody in his residence, then it limits that greatly. Mm-hmm. And especially when you get college students that come in. I have one instance that actually last week, she wanted to try to change it to fit hers as far as the definition for the family. So she wanted to basically rent out to three family members and then three additional college students.
Each family member has a roommate?
Well, then it would change that to have the family members as one family unit and then three additional. And where that did come into play is where you have to provide six parking stalls, and they didn't have adequate space to do that. So we want to fall back on the family definition.
Can I bring up something? Steven, you brought up something interesting on occupancy I've been thinking about. It says the accessory apartment may only be rented to one family unit. I wonder if we should carve out where it is renting out bedrooms, that it's one family unit as a whole for the entire home. So it's not just, see where I'm going with this?
So if you have three bedrooms, it's not one family unit.
Let's say I have an accessory apartment and in my home. Well, does that mean I can rent to four people upstairs and then four different people downstairs? Total of eight?
I guess you could.
You have an apartment.
So,
two family units. Yeah.
So I wonder if that needs to be fleshed out a little bit more.
That was kind of what I was getting at.
I heard you. I picked up what you're putting down.
A lot of people in the house.
No, you really can.
We're liberal with this.
So I wonder if that needs to be changed a little bit.
Do we want to go back to what regular occupancy would be having for?
Well, I mean, there are occupancy limits.
No,
of bedrooms in a house and how many people can live there.
I'm not comfortable with the old occupancy definition, just because let's say that you have a young couple, they have two kids, one on the way. Once that new baby is born, are they evicted? I mean, that's a headline I don't want to be in. So if you limit the ADU to one family unit, so do you? Maybe it's just language where you say a separate living area. Shall only be limited. I have to think about this one.
Are you wanting to limit the number of accessory apartments or limit the number of people?
Both.
Both.
So, both. Are we talking about limiting it to one accessory apartment?
Yes. Well, I think the code is clear on that matter.
It's not in Section J anyway. It's not clear. So.
Not in J, but it's earlier.
Yeah, mentioned elsewhere.
One ADU or one bedroom, you know, then you count as one ADU, even though they have other spare bedrooms they could rent out.
I don't know the answer to this one right now. Sorry, Jenny.
No, that's all right.
Has anybody else addressed this in their code well with those?
I don't think so. No.
No, Not necessarily. Basically, it refers back to the family unit and their family definition. So that's
it could
why,
be.
This should refer back to
what? What? Eight unrelated people, and so...
Technically nine, you know.
Right, and then
the other still there.
That's almost a group home, right?
Still got
a frat house.
This does speak to the point I've made a few times that I feel like our family definition needs to be fixed. I'm just going to throw that out there again.
There are family definitions.
I don't like ours.
In the fair housing, you know, language coming from the DOJ, like there's stuff we could probably pull out of that.
I'll go look.
But
it's pretty broad. We used to have a narrower family definition, and it got pretty broad some years back.
Well, I feel like ours is overly broad right now. I think it needs to be narrowed down quite a bit.
Too, because we can get ourselves in trouble.
No, you do. You walk a fine line.
So, and our council isn't here tonight, so maybe we should back off and something
else. I can raise this with our attorney and see what advice he can give. I'll follow up with you on that one.
The grandfather clause, is the date going to be the date when we pass the ordinance? So anybody that's doing what they want to right now is exempted? Is that, like, what is that saying?
So under section N, there's a registration, go back to M and then N.
2-year registration.
Yeah, so they have 2 years to apply to registration. And this N is taken out of because of role. It's just word for word.
But the exception, the Q says that they're accepted. If they're prior to the date, it doesn't say anything about
but they still
have
to be.
But it doesn't say that.
Yes, it does. If you go back to under 1, section 1, under M1, when they submit a registration fee, it shows what the details they have to do in this application. And if you go down to M, which will be the building official, will go out and make the correction, or the inspection on that, and then they have to make those corrections. But in this section, they wouldn't necessarily be required to get a building permit unless it is new construction or remodeling on the apartment.
So I don't think that the separation is clear enough there in Q that the provisions shall not apply. Say that provisions M and N shall apply, but the building code.
Can I throw out an idea here?
What?
Can I throw out an idea I just had?
Sure.
Changing it says to read the provisions of subsection B1 CEL, this section shall not apply to approved accessory dwelling units. So if they were approved prior to this, they're grandfathered in.
Yeah, I just think that leaves
rather than
us wide open.
Rather than. Because I agree that this one, I'll be honest, I met with Jenny, was it Friday? I had a little bit of heartburn about Q. I'm not in love with it. But if you change single-family dwelling to accessory dwelling units to approved accessory dwelling units, well, then you're really taking your pool from, you know, everybody to select individuals that have applied.
Which right now I could probably have a lawyer beat this to death and say,
yeah,
this approved, this applies to me because I had it before this date. It doesn't matter what you say. How much it says, I have an exception.
Okay. How many do we have approved in our city today? Approximately. Anybody know?
Roughly about 3.
That's all we have,
that
too.
Many? Wow. Some brave people.
Yeah. I do agree that it's a little bit nebulous there about the exemption.
Okay. I think that changing that to narrow it down to what we already have approved. That way they're grandfathered in, because it really wouldn't be fair to put onerous requirements on them where they've already felt like they've complied, you know, and in good faith as well.
Yeah, that was my intent with the comments, that we need to make sure that people that have one that's not registered and not regulated, that they don't think that they're accepted because of the exception being.
Okay, I think we can change the language to accommodate that. And
I think that's most of all.
All right. So I have a few things. If I can go back to the beginning. And so, accessory apartment, in terms of defined, we use that word may have its own heating, sleeping, and sanitation facilities. I may be the minority here, but I've heard them say that it must have its own heating, sleeping, and sanitation facilities. So it's truly, in my mind, a true accessory apartment. Otherwise, our apartment definition becomes pretty broad. It's basically any 300 square foot bedroom is an apartment. It doesn't have to have a kitchen, doesn't need to have a bathroom. They don't have to sleep in there technically because it's a requirement to sleep in there. So when we say may, then we're basically saying it's pretty broad. Our definition becomes pretty broad. I think it's worth the name. I do that with us.
I actually disagree. I know a neighbor that for a short time, she's elderly, and she had her grandson and his wife stay with her, and they lived there, and they paid rent for about a year, and they did not have their own kitchen. It just means if she's renting to her grandson now, she's in violation of law. And she wasn't going to put in a whole kitchen in the basement for this short amount of time. So
shared common areas. Wouldn't that mean they would have a shared, let's say they have a bedroom,
that's
shared kitchen,
exactly.
Shared living room,
that's
shared laundry.
So
but that's a related person too. So like
but our code does not allow you to collect rent from a related person.
Yeah.
So this would allow them to do that. This really is, David's right in his interpretation of this, that this does allow people to rent out
a room
to a renter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is what I personally am strongly opposed to. I mean, being a minority here, but basically this code essentially turns all of our residences into little mini hotels with room here and room there for a certain duration, obviously. But when there's no requirement for eating, sleeping, or sanitation, then as long as it's a 300 square foot area, by the way, master closet is 300 square feet, that point. There's somebody in there.
We possibly limit the bedroom.
What's that?
Possibly limit the bedrooms.
Well, that was what I was trying to get at.
Okay, I
understand. I just want to understand, so this body is in favor of allowing people to rent a bedroom that will share their kitchen and bathrooms and not be related, right? Just list something on ksl.com and come live in my house and eat with me in my kitchen and share my bathroom.
We actually do have some of those to your guests.
Right. So I'm personally opposed to that, but maybe this body's...
You're opposed to H here that says accessory dwellings are subject to the compliance in the current building code. An accessory dwelling unit that contains a studio or a single bedroom with shared common area is exempt from the minimum square footage limitation. So it does assume that we are approving that, but is that already approved, or are we adding that? To me, it looks like it's already there.
So part of the reason why we want to do that is to add affordable housing units.
Yeah.
That we don't have right now. So this allows us to comply with that new requirement in ways that we couldn't before. So it doesn't have to have built out apartment facility. It could be a bedroom to allow us to meet some of the requirements. Is that, Chandler, is that the intent here? Yes.
Correct.
Yes. So it's to keep us from running up into that state affordable housing requirement.
The state does require the city to have an affordable income housing element in the general plan, which is coming. We're working on it. But the state this is such of a concern to the state that there actually legislation was passed this legislative session that takes 1.8% of our sales tax, local sales option sales tax, and siphons it off the top right from the get-go and sends it to cities in Salt Lake where they have the homeless shelters. So the financial hit from this for our city is somewhere in the ballpark of $20,000 to $30,000 to help fund public safety for those communities. And that's because we don't have low-income housing. We don't have a homeless shelter, and we're not going to, quite frankly. We just, the nature of our city, we're built out. The demographics don't lend itself to that type of development. But the city is required to have a moderate income housing plan. And even moderate income housing in Cedar Hills is kind of a rare thing. It just, like I said, the demographics of Cedar Hills don't lend itself to moderate income. That's just into the valley. This isn't a situation that's unique to us. So this does allow us to address some of our moderate income housing needs in a way that people are already doing it, but allows us to track it better.
Regulated to tax. And so is there a number that we can push that we don't comply with the moderate income housing requirements?
They haven't given us anything like that, but you could, based on what I've heard, is you could be subject to losing some of your state and federal funding. So you look at our roads, for instance, it's funded through Class B and C road funds. The city could lose those. So if that's the case, then you're looking at a $250,000 hit a year and bad roads.
So I don't think anybody's here as opposed to having accessory parks. We're just talking about what they'll be like. Going back to the word may again, another consequence of using the word may is you could technically rent out a portion, a 300 square foot portion of your house, and maybe it may not be a bedroom because it doesn't have to be a sleeping area necessarily. Maybe a sleeping area, but it doesn't have to be. But you could also technically to rent something out to somebody and say, you're welcome to stay here, but you can't use my bathroom and you can't use my area.
I don't know why that person would rent that.
Well, I'm just saying, now you have somebody who doesn't have a place to use facilities and a place to eat because it's not required.
So I guess we could
I have no response to that.
I believe my case. You've seen strange circumstances in our city over the years.
Yeah.
The code does sometimes create strange circumstances.
That would win.
I guess there needs to be access to facilities somewhere in here. It says either they will be shared with the primary residence or they will be...
I mean, you can add... may have its own eating, sleeping, and sanitation facilities, or have a common eatings, well, not put sleeping, but eating and sanitation facilities.
I might be able to go
or just common facilities.
Must have a sleeping area at the very least. You want your couch out or something?
Airbnbs.
Anywhere that a person is living in or sleeping has to comply with the bedroom requirements of, like, a fire escape and a closet and, like, just the same building code requirements you have.
It does. You do have to comply with building code, and there are certain building codes for a sleeping area.
So we must have a bedroom then. We must have a sleeping area. We got one of the three down, so that's good.
But a studio does have to have facilities.
Yes.
It just doesn't have to be in a separate room. Like, it has to have a door for the bathroom, but everything else involved in the same room.
Right.
But there's a minimum square footage for that when you have a studio apartment.
All right, I delayed with that stuff, but that's pretty small. I think I think the body is...
My name is Maverine, is his middle name.
I want to move on now.
I like that show. I know.
I wouldn't say it's the greatest show.
But
she has a parent lady. She's at least.
So we have zoning administrator and building official. So I just want to make sure.
Those are correct titles.
Or, right?
No, it'll be both.
Well, it's two people to approve.
Both have
to be there. So. And then in B, we mentioned CUP. And we don't have a definition of that. I know what it means, but I don't really want to spell out conditions from it or put it in the definitions. Whenever we exact your terms, that's, I think, good to either spell out or put it.
And spell it out
the first time.
Yeah.
Well, if we say conditional use permit in A, if we could just in parentheses put CUP after that, then it's defined for the rest of the document.
Or spill it out for the document.
So you want it spelled out in your time limitation?
Anywhere we use CUP, let's spell it out.
Yeah, we don't really use it.
Or at a minimum, I have CUP in permit.
Yeah.
It's either something under.
And then in time limit, we have shall be valid for the year, which is first issued, and then we have thereafter. So, so make me understand this. If somebody applies on December 31st, they have to reapply on January 1st?
Yes. And that would just be the registration for that. The conditional use permit is runs with the land. It's completely separate.
Okay. All right. I think most people probably apply earlier in the year, which is why we're in section E, entrances. We can have that word may have a dedicated entrance located. Do we, I know there's interior and exterior, so just to be clear, we're not going to require separate entrances to the accessory apartment.
Right. They're going to share the common area, bathroom, kitchen. And they have a single entrance.
And then G, we talk about the main living area. Interacts between the main living area. It seems like other parts of this code we refer to that as primary residence or principal. Main living area is kind of a ordinary broad that we could use elsewhere. So maybe interior access between. I think in the earlier we used it, later we used like principal residence or second or
principal dwelling unit.
Principal dwelling, yeah, thank you. So maybe we say principal dwelling here.
What if you just said? What if you just said when an accessory apartment is located within the main living area, an interior access shall be maintained.
Say that again.
When an accessory apartment is located within the main living area, an interior access must be maintained.
What's the main living area? Where is that?
Main dwelling. I could say main dwelling.
Okay.
Okay. We can reword
actually
that.
Like that.
There. That addresses your.
That does.
Anywhere else. Yes. Can you
restate
that?
I don't think so. No. So it'll be when an accessory apartment is located within the main dwelling, an interior access shall be maintained.
Yes.
Did you get that, Jenny?
Almost.
I didn't write it down, so you better. I'm going to lose it.
When accessory apartment is located within the main dwelling, shall
an interior access.
Right, and that's just so we don't have duplexes.
Yeah, yes. Correct.
So in section I there, on 1A,
come to me.
We have sabbaticals or voluntary service. A couple thoughts there. One is we may want to add involuntary service to that.
Are
they conscripted in the military or
valid?
Prison does count as that. Sure. I crossed my mind, but I didn't want to say it that way. So we add involuntary service. I think that would encompass prison, conscripted in the military, or things of that nature.
Military involuntary.
Do you want it to specify military or just involuntary?
I would say involuntary.
So this bringing up the military. So let's say that someone is in the military and owns this house.
Even that's not involuntary.
But they may be gone for.
These are gone.
I mean, who knows? Maybe a family home that they own. They may be gone for 10 years, like on their rotation, and they may not come back to it. that probably should be excluded because.
Well, we're not saying that they can't rent the house out.
They
just can't rent it out to two family units. So basically, they still are able to rent it, but just unless the, for that 3 years, it would have to be a relative living in stores in the portion of the house.
I have a question about that also. You said immediate family, immediate relative family member. What is the definition of that? What if it is a grandchild of the owner of the home? Is that immediate?
To be honest with you, I don't have a definition for that.
It says, immediate family member must be living there. I'm like, well, what if they rent it out to their grandchildren who
I'm okay with that.
That's where we're running into a little bit of a situation with this one A, B, and C.
I think you just take out the word immediate and say when an owner has a relative living residence.
That's a little broad for me. That's
technically her cousin, that's fine. The relative family. So that's one way of addressing it. Instead of trying to define every relative or really son, daughter, grandpa.
Probably related to most people in the car. Somehow.
If you're on the fourth generation chart, it's good to go, right?
Can we add some verbiage that states that a relative that does not pay rent? Yeah, that kind of verbiage.
Let me ask you this, do we care?
No.
Because they may just be paying the mortgage while they're gone.
Or there may not be a mortgage.
I don't know that the city's ever going to go around and say, you know what, your relative isn't immediate enough for us. You know?
Don't tempt us.
No,
really, honestly, these really only become a problem when they are renting to one family upstairs and another family downstairs, and then it becomes one of the rentals becomes a party house, or one of the rentals, you know, takes up the entire street with parking. That's when the city usually gets involved on some level.
But only required them to have their own bathroom.
So in order to prevent that, those are the steps we're taking now, is in order to prevent that ultimate occurrence.
Right, but we are preventing that, but we're also going above and beyond and implying anyone that's renting for any reason is also subject to this. So it's not just the nuisance that we're policing at this point. It's every rental that's, you know. So
fair enough.
Yes, we can say that, but at the same time, we're also imposing this on everyone. Like, there's a nuisance piece to this. Mm-hmm. That's not the main reason.
It's a lot of it.
But we're going to be.
I mean, if
we're going to have more people registering these and using them than the people that would have the problems. Like, it's not just going to be
true.
The people that we're policing. It's going to be everything.
True, but. By policing this, you are, in a way, using your delegated state police powers to preserve a certain type of residential neighborhood.
Sure. No, I'm not saying that we're not. But what I'm saying is that small portion of frat houses that we are regulating also...
It's larger than you think.
So does this body have a recommendation for replacing this 48 with something else?
The more specific we get, the more liability we have. And the more due diligence we have to maybe to enforce it.
So what are you suggesting?
If we get more granular, then we have to be able to back that up somehow.
So do you want to take out the word immediate? Is that a proposal?
How would you enforce immediate? I guess is the question. We're giving you authority to decide whether or not someone is immediate. How are you going to do that?
Problem is they're going to say this is my cousin twice removed on my mother's side.
They're a relative. It's fine.
But
I'm not as fine.
I mean, I've got a 12th cousin that I work.
How about this? How about we just say and change it to family for purpose of the definition? This is from our code already. For purpose of the definition of family, the term related shall mean a spouse, parent, child, grandparent, grandchild, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, nephew, niece, great-grandparent, great-grandchild. Is that sufficiently broad? That encompasses broad. Just about everyone, but it doesn't say cousin.
I'm better with that.
So we just say, then this is another area where we just reference the city's family code.
So we can say related person.
Say that again?
Related person, is that what the definition
as defined
is?
In
as defined by the family definition.
Okay, I like that.
Okay.
The code states this.
Okay.
Yes.
See. Sorry, I didn't have that thought 10 minutes ago.
That's better.
That's okay.
Okay, let me keep going. I think I've just a couple of things here.
One of the
that's actually all mine. Does anybody else have anything else?
Yeah, back on that. I won the... So, we have a three-year absence criteria here, but if someone's placed in a hospital, nursing home, or assisted living facility, or other similar facility, they're not coming back, even after 3 years.
I don't want to go to his hospital.
I mean, there's a potential that you could be... you could be in a retirement facility like that for 10, 20, 25 years. You know, there's no like the 3 year limitation.
The 3 year only refers to Section A, right?
Right, and I think that's why it's
Section
before the family, the owner is placed in hospital nursing home. So after A, it's this or.
Yeah, you don't need to meet each criteria. It's just one of the three.
A or B.
Right.
Okay.
Hold on, is it one of the three?
One of the three.
Then at the
but
end of
the
B, you need another or.
No, it's not going to be...
The following criteria isn't all-inclusive.
So they live
no, I think
here.
As I'm reading this, I think C should be up in the one.
Yeah, I think so.
Because that's a qualifying for both.
Yes.
So you have to have lived in the home for 1 year and one of the following.
And this or this.
But it doesn't say that. So let's make sure that it says and one of the following.
The or implies that, though.
Yeah.
You're right.
There's one more.
At the end of A. So strike out the C, make that part of the one, and then it's just A or B.
So I know you probably spent hours writing this and adding this, and you probably
good job.
Really were excited to have this all wrapped up in the book and not ever dealt with again.
This is not easy code to write.
Well, this was a combined effort. It wasn't just for this time. So, I appreciate that.
Is there any other recommendations? So we have an option of attempting to pass a motion where we recommend Jesus' code, or we have an option to table it again.
I'd like to see the revised language.
Somebody make a motion.
I shall move that we table item number 4. It's not item 4.
It's 4.
Okay, yeah. Item 4, review recommendation amendments to Cedar Hill City Code 10-5-32 related to accessory apartments be tabled per provisions to until the next, well, until the next.
I'll say it.
So, until the next meeting. Is that doable, the city staff?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. You second it?
I second.
Is there any discussion before we vote? All those in favor say aye.
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 And also aye. So, the motion carries. So, I will now entertain the motion
can
to
we,
adjourn.
Before you do that, can I just,
yes.
So you know, we're going to be sending out a few dates for the next Planning Commission. Right now we're shooting for April 19th. It's a Thursday night, as the 17th is a council meeting night. The other option is to wait until the first week of May, which would also probably be a Thursday.
Okay. morning, Thursday, and May.
Just getting them in as soon as we can. So Tuesdays aren't going to work, because the first Tuesday in May is going to be a council meeting.
So normally we'd hold a meeting on May 29th, is that right? Is it the fourth week?
Yeah.
Or so it would be 22nd?
How likely is it, do you think, the developer will be here on April 9th?
Not long.
It's not a lot of time. It also doesn't give staff a lot of time to notice it. So right now, I'm leaning towards recommending May 3rd, which is the first Thursday in May. We would end up having two meetings in May.
I'm not opposed to having two meetings in May, but I've also seen it when we hold an extra meeting for developers and then they just take time.
There would be another item, and this would come back, obviously. So the May meeting would supplant the second meeting in May, which would actually be the first meeting in May, but would be the supplant the April meeting.
Are we going to do any general plan interview stuff?
We are. We've been waiting for the legislative session to end to kind of just see what happens with the accessory dwellings or with the moderate income housing rules. So you'll start seeing that as well.
Right. Personally, I care greatly about this when this next meeting is, but I have a son graduating with his master's on that day. I don't know if it's the
on
day.
The
I don't actually know what time it is.
May 3rd?
Yeah. I want to like make you all wait while I text. But, you know, I don't actually know what time it is.
We can also go on a Wednesday night.
Or what night we pick, somebody won't be able to attend.
Yeah, where we're not going on a regular night, there's a good chance that... Who are we kidding? Not everyone's here tonight. It's a regularly scheduled meeting.
Yeah.
So how about this? I will throw out a few dates to the Planning Commission,
okay,
and we'll see when we can get a quorum together.
Okay.
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 So right here, motion to adjourn.
I'm going to adjourn.
Second. Before I go, I wanted to commend the public for staying.
You guys are crazy.
Very excited to like home to get out here with us, so thanks for attending. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.